Always Home to Smallville is brought to you by listeners like you. Tim Miller, John Curcio, Jazz Ed Maja, Chris Fuchs, John Lloyd, Atif Sheik, Justin Maitner, Gavante Chillis, Molly Ficarella, Thomas Navin, Quentin Tracy, Mike Franz, Nathan McKenzie, Joe Mickendo, Trayvon Brady, Steve Rogers, Eddie Bissell, Cameron Minard, Nick Ryan Magdoza, Becca Zeifel, Nicholas Casso, Tom Gerke, and Nicholas Fansler. Thank you so much to all these patrons, and you too can become a patron by going to patreon.com/alwaysmallville. Hope to see you there.
I'm Michael Rosenbaum, Lex Luthor, and always hold on to Smallville.
Welcome to Always Home to Smallville. In this podcast, we talk about each and every episode of the Young Superman show that ran from 2001 to 2011 on the WB and the CW. I'm your host, Zach Moore, and I'm joined this week by, from sci-fi, Trisha Innes. What's up, Trisha?
Yo. What's up? I don't know. Very little is up right now.
Yes. Well, I'll tell you what's up. Talking about Smallville. That's what we're talking about.
We are talking about Smallville. We're talking about the fourth season of Smallville.
The fourth season of Smallville, right? And I am on record with everybody. Like, this was maybe my least favorite season. And I must say, I am pleasantly surprised that I am enjoying the season as much as I have been. I really think that I might have gotten it a bad rap. And now that I'm revisiting it, I'm enjoying it.
Yeah, and I'm going to sit here and be smug about that because the last time I was on, you were like, what's your favorite season of Smallville? And I was like, season 4. And you were like, that's my least favorite season of Smallville. It's terrible. And you're obviously wrong. So I'm glad you're finding that out.
The highs are high. The lows are lower. There's a lot of good to middle ground episodes here. Not every episode was like facepalm inducing like I might have thought in my memory. So Recruit is a great example because I was talking to you about the next episode that you wanted to come on, right? And you, I mentioned Recruit to you and you're like, oh God, I would love that one. I'm like, oh, that's a terrible episode.
Exactly. I was so surprised that you were like, you were appalled at the fact that I wanted to talk about this episode because I love this episode. And you're like, this is the worst episode. It's not the worst episode of the season.
That's true. No, by far, it's not. And I think part of the issue with my mindset about this one was it's all about Clark playing football again. And I'd always had a big problem with that. Although this episode actually finally addresses it properly. Although I feel like my deal from the jump was early season one, they did that. They're like, he was on the football team for like half an episode. He quit. His dad made his points about, you know, you're not here to score touchdowns. And it was fine. We didn't need to go back to it. And then for like 3.5 years, Clark didn't talk about football, didn't think about football. It was like, it wasn't even a factor. And then suddenly beginning of season 4, it's like, I want to play football. I want to be normal. And I was like, whoa, what is this? Like, I understand it's in the comics, right? In some point, but in Smallville, it wasn't part of his character. But hey, it's season 4. They're like, what haven't we done yet? Let's pull this off. Let's dust it off. They did it. You know, I've talked to numerous guests about that thread of this season on here. And I've kind of, I'm not 100% won over to it, but I'm not like, oh, football garbage. I'm not like that anymore. Like I was in the past. So that helped me appreciate this episode more. And in Smallville, the official companion season 4 by Craig Byrne, available wherever books are sold. Al Goff had this to say about this plot line being resolved. Clark realized, to paraphrase the words of Glenn Ford as Jonathan Kent in Superman the movie, you were put here to do more than to throw football. And what Jonathan brought out was, you know, no matter what you're doing, Clark, you're cheating because you're always going to be better than everybody else. So, you know, is it a true victory? Additionally, when he saw what happened to the other kid with powers in Recruit, I think Clark recognized that he's stepping into a much bigger, much more complicated world, and it's going to be harder to hide his secret. All the things that people will look the other way on in a small town are questions they won't ask. That's not going to be the case when you're a huge college football star. So I think it was a combination of these two factors. And I think ultimately, like Superman, it was very selfless to give up what you want, knowing your powers are to be used for more than just your own edification and glorification. So there you have it. I think that's a good lesson and a good sacrifice for Clark. So on that premise alone, I'm like, okay, the football plotline, fine. And now it's over. So we don't have to talk about it anymore after this episode.
Well, I mean, that was the whole point of the episode, right? Was to wrap up the football plot line. It was like, obviously, Clark can't go and play football in college, especially because, as we'll find out later, they don't spend very much time in college.
No. No, Clark turns down his full scholarship to Met U, and that's it. And then he goes like Central Kansas A&M for like half a semester, and then Dark Thursday happens, then no one ever goes to college anymore. So what can he do, right?
Yep, no one ever goes to college again. Yeah.
Now, this episode is following up Pariah, which Clark's girlfriend Alicia had been murdered. And there was some talk about like why that wasn't addressed or anything like that. So I did want to mention that Brian Peterson and Kelly Sanders, who go on to be producers, executive producers on the show, they addressed this in the companion. And they said, quote, "Usually when we have a massive loss or a moment like that, we always have to kind of hit the reset button a little bit the next week. Because otherwise, every one of our characters would be in an insane asylum because of all the people they've seen die. We always try, even if it's in the B story or the tone, to thread through some kind of an aftermath of the emotion, whether it's Lana killing somebody on a pitchfork or Clark losing Alicia. What is that person going through in the next episode, even if it doesn't seem like a talking about it on screen?" So I think it's interesting they bring up the example of Lana killing someone with a pitchfork, because that is like exhibit A of like what I'm talking about. Like, this 15, 16 year old girl just killed somebody, and then it's not even addressed in that episode, never again. And it's like, you guys, I just want to like be like, what? In what way do you think you're doing this? Because I want to just pull you aside and say you're not.
Right, exactly. And that was the thing that I was thinking about watching it too, because I have a tendency when I rewatch to like skip the Alicia episodes.
You don't like Alicia?
Yeah. I just don't care that much about the character, and I thought she was kind of, I don't know, I think she's kind of one note, but
Interesting alternate perspective. A lot of people love her, but that's cool. It's fresh. I like
it. They rub me the wrong way, I guess. But I do appreciate Pariah for the fact that it's the one where like Chloe finds out, right? Mm-hmm. And this is the only aftermath we really get is the aftermath of Chloe finding out about Clark's powers. We don't get the aftermath of Alicia dying. And while I understand that like they can't talk about every single death that happens because someone dies like once a week, this is different than that. Like, this was someone that Clark cared about and was dating, and she died. And like,
yeah, I mean, she was in multiple seasons. Like, I know she was only in three episodes, but this is a character who like this isn't someone you like just met this week and they just died. They loved each other, you know. I mean, you throw out that word and then somebody dies and then you never talk about him again. She comes up a couple times just in side conversation or as a picture on somebody's computer later.
Right.
But yeah, you're right. This is not the episodic TV series storytelling style we have today. For better or for worse, you know, I mean, there are some things to be said for episodic, and I think some of the pitfalls of episodic TV we're finally realizing them, when it's like, oh, I have to go rewatch an entire season of this show to even, like, you can't pick out one random episode of, like, you know, Game of Thrones and watch it. It's just not, maybe, with exception, you know, there might be one specific one. But yeah, it's like, what's going on? So it's nice to kind of cherry pick and have a favorites. And nowadays in the binge culture, when shows get released on Netflix or CBS All Access or whatever, right? It's all one big giant episode, just chopped into chapters. So yeah, I get it. I do wish there would have been some more repercussions of this, because he's back, not this episode, because him and Lana, of course, is in season four. They don't have any scenes together. But by the end of season four, him and Lana are like, you know, back to, you know, pining for each other again and all that stuff. It's like, I don't know, Clark. It's the nature of network TV, though.
Yeah, it is. I get it. I get why they did it. It's just, I think they should have had, like, you pick and choose the ones that actually matter. And I feel like the Alicia one does actually matter, even if I don't care about the character. Clark obviously did.
You mentioned somebody dies every week. Somebody dies in this one, too. So
somebody does die in this one. And Lois is blamed for it.
Yes. Yes. So this is a big episode for Lois, which is one of the reasons you want to talk about it.
Which is
why
I like it, because I love Lois.
All right, well, let's get into it. Recruit.
I think Jeff John's paralyzed Coop.
What?
He's passing his physicals by using another student's urine samples.
Black market pee? What's he trying to cover up? Drugs?
Yeah, I don't think so. I think it's something else. I just saw him touch this kid and he put him straight to the ground like he hit him with a stun gun. And the linebackers, they always say when they get stiff-armed by Jeff Johns, they don't know what hit them. They go down to the turf every time. I think he has a meteor power.
Using your powers on the field to cheat, it's pathetic, but it's not paralyzing someone.
What if he can control the intensity when he stuns someone?
Well, if that's true, you're gonna have to find a way to prove it, because nobody outside the Smallville city limits is gonna believe the Bulldog Superstar has superhuman powers.
The pea peddler might know the truth about Jeff.
Can you track him down?
Yeah.
I'm gonna go to the football dorm. I'm gonna try to find Jeff before he can hurt someone else.
Recruit is the 13th episode of Smallville's fourth season. It aired on February 9th, 2005. It's written by Todd Slavkin and Darren Swimmer, and directed by Jeno Swark. Our friend Jeno Swark from Supergirl, right, Trisha?
Yes.
He directed Supergirl, the movie, and now he's back on Smallville. He has done quite a few small episodes. He's kind of a mixed bag. I mean, he's done episodes like Perry and Homecoming, which are great. And then he's in episodes like Spell and Noir, which are not great.
Okay, I like Noir.
You know, your mileage may vary on Noir. I just think for a black and white goofy flashback fantasy episode to come like right at the end of the season when important things should be happening, that was just poor placement.
Yes. You know? Okay, that's fine. Poor placement, but fun episode.
Okay. In a void, it's fun. But like when you're in the home stretch, you're at the end of a season, like
when it's
we
episode
have time
20,
for this.
Yeah.
Yes, we have time for this. But anyway, we're still in the middle of the season here, so it's perfectly acceptable to do an episode like this. So we start out at Metropolis U, and a very just Hollywood interpretation of a college party, right? We have, you know, just all the things, like all the cliche things you can think of are going on at this party. And Lois is drinking under the table, these like three jock guys, and doing a real good job of winning a drinking game with them.
Yeah, but I know I personally didn't spend a lot of time on a college campus when I was in college, but I can't imagine that any college party includes a drinking game where people are betting?
Just throwing cash on the table.
They're throwing cash on the table, and whoever like wins the drinking game gets to take home the cash. And I'm like, who does that? It's like alcoholic poker.
It's alcoholic poker. That's right. And you're right, though, because I think everyone's a little probably impaired at this party. So I don't know who you would trust to walk away with this table of cash, though. But we start out with three guys. One guy hits the table. Another guy, like the biggest guy, you think he's gonna be okay, but then he starts to kind of act like he's gonna throw up, so he's gone. And we got one guy left who we go on to. His name is Coop. As we find out, and he is done. Lois is trying to talk. He's like, "Look, man, you're done. Okay, I won. Just walk away while you can." He's like, "Oh man, I'm not even buzzed." You know, it's just so the great fake drunk voice. But then his buddy Jeff Johns comes up, and Jeff Johns, the character name, a reference to Jeff Johns, the writer for DC Comics, who's gone on to write and work on several of the films. Writes several episodes of Smallville down the line. Jeff Johns is my favorite comic book writer. I love everything that he does. He just brings a certain, I don't know, sense of humanity and perspective, and just able to distill down these crazy, iconic stories into something really relatable, and you can really attach yourself to it.
He actually likes the Green Lantern comics.
Yes, exactly. He reinvented the Green Lantern, reinvented Aquaman, reinvented Captain Marvel / Shazam. Yeah. I mean, his work on those comic books shows in those movies. Two of them very successful and very well received. One of them not so much. I guess Shazam, it really technically at the time of this recording hasn't come out yet, but I've seen it already and I loved it.
So have I. It was great.
Perfect. See, we're on the same page.
I enjoyed it a lot.
So it's just funny to hear Jeff Johns killed this man. It's just to hear that said throughout the episode is kind of like, whoa, okay. But anyway, he's played by Chris Carmack, who was on the OC. That's apparently his claim to fame. He was on the OC as Luke Ward, kind of a bully. And also, he starred in The Butterfly Effect 3, not to be confused with The Butterfly Effect 2, starring Edgar Durant, not to be confused with The Butterfly Effect, starring Ashton Kutcher. So,
yes.
Anyway, I have not fallen down the rabbit hole of Butterfly Effect direct-to-video sequels, but I might at some point due to the Smallville connection.
Yes, I have only seen one of them, and it's the first one, and yes. It was traumatizing enough, so I don't know that I need to see the rest of it.
Yeah, exactly, right? I don't need to see more of this. But anyway, he goes up to Coop, and he's like, hey, man, I think you've had enough. We got physicals coming up. We have a big day. The recruit is coming tomorrow, so we have a +1 for episode title, said an episode. Love that. Now, spoiler alert, as we find out, Jeff Johns has his power to paralyze people. And I thought for a second he was going to use it here to stop the guy from drinking,
right?
I haven't seen this in a while. But he doesn't, does he, Trisha?
No, he does not. Instead, okay, I need to point out one of my favorite things about this scene, which other than the weird setting and the alcoholic poker and the fact that floor looks like I don't want to be standing on it, Lois is at this party in a pajama set decorated with breakfast.
Breakfast pajamas.
It's breakfast pajamas, and I love the idea that Lois goes to parties in her pajamas.
And her slippers, too, as we find out later. It's
and her slippers, one. Yes, but that they do not negate her ability to take down a drunk jock.
No, not at all, right? So Coop here, right, he does put down the drink. Lois wins.
Yes.
Everybody goes home. She's walking home, and she's like, fresh air. You know, she's just trying to compose herself.
You're
to get
not
back
gonna
to
vomit.
Yes. And then Coop comes up to her, right? He's like, hey, I got a new game we can play, and this time we both win. We're like, whoa, I know what's going on here. But Lois doesn't have any of it, does she, Trisha?
She doesn't. Lois is amazing. And I love her a lot. No. So Lois is being propositioned by the stupid jock. And of course she's like, dude, I don't want to go back to your dorm room. You have a girlfriend, go bother her. And he's like, no, babe, it's fine. And so she kicks him in the sternum area or stomach and he falls down.
Mm-hmm. And he's like, oh, that hurt. She's like, all right, see you later. And she walks off and you think, okay, good. So next morning she wakes up. I love how she's like backwards in her bed. Her feet are on her pillow. She's really disoriented from the night before. Somebody's banging on her dorm room. And of course, as you do when you're in college, you just ignore it. But they're very aggressive. They keep banging, banging. She's like, okay. Mm-hmm. Opens the door. Boom. It's the cops. And they're like, are you Lois Lane? We understand you had an altercation with blah, blah, blah last night. She's like, yeah. An altercation being I kicked him in the, you know, whatever, and leave me alone. They're like, well, he's paralyzed, and you're under arrest. It's like, somebody save me. And so that's quite a tease there. Would she really be under arrest for this? Like, it seems like
she
a quick
would be,
justice.
Actually, if she was also, okay, so who, did he say that she was the one who assaulted him? I'm assuming. He must have, because otherwise, like, who the hell was there to see her knock him down? But other than that, if he is paralyzed because of something that she did, it's assault. Mm-hmm. So she would be under arrest.
Well, I'm trying to just figure out, as you said, who told these people, because he can't talk, I assume, right? So I guess Chris, mm-hmm. Chris, what's his name? That's the actor's name. Jeff Johns.
Yes, Jeff Johns must have done it.
Must have come up to him like when he was like on the ground, and maybe he was passed out because he was drunk. Jeff Johns does the paralyzation thing, and then maybe tells the cops.
Maybe called 911.
Anonymous tip. Who knows? So yeah. But anyway.
Yeah, they don't really say like what happened and how it ended up the way that it was. But whatever. Lois is under arrest. This is bad.
Yeah.
Not good things.
Not good. So then we cut to opening credits. We come back and Clark is packing for his campus trip.
Is he packing in the barn?
Yeah, it's weird. Like, oh, let me get all the other things I need that I keep in the barn. They never really show us Clark's room. I swear, we see Clark's room about 3 or 4 times, period, on this show. And it must be at some house that's too expensive to rent, so they just use their barn set.
I don't know. We very rarely see the upstairs of the Kent farm.
Yeah, I don't think we never see, like, the Kent's room.
Yeah, we see the bathroom. Mostly it.
We see the bathroom
multiple times.
Yeah, we do. We see, you know, I was thinking about this, and we see Clark crash when he's having a dream about Lois in the second episode from a dream. Mm-hmm. We see his room in an obsession when Alicia pops in, speaking of Alicia. And then I don't know what episode in season 6 it is, but there's some episode where Lana has to stay with the Kents, and then she's in his room. She's going through all his stuff. and she finds the necklace. The necklace, yeah, but it's clear now. She's like, what does it mean?
Yep.
So, but honestly,
we do see the Kents room. I think in season 7 when Clark and Lana are together and they break the bed.
Oh, because he's moving to his parents' room now.
His mom is away. Yeah. I think that's it. It's like 5 times. Over a 10-year show, we see the upstairs about 5 times, and most of the time it's the bathroom.
Yes, there's something to be said for that.
But
I'm
otherwise,
not sure what.
he keeps all of his stuff, I guess, in his little fortress.
He does. He keeps, like, if there's any, like, Kryptonian artifact or a map to a cave, he keeps all the best stuff in this easily accessible barn with no door. As Lois points out in this episode, has no doors and has no privacy. But this scene goes about how you would expect, and Jonathan's like, all right, Clark, well, you know, you got to be careful out there. But, you know, as you wrap around to the end, it is a little refreshing because, you know, you get all the normal stuff you expect from Jonathan. But then he says, hey, the most important thing is there's a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity. Have a great time. And they leave on a good note, and I like that.
Of course, they leave on a good note, and then the Teflon Tailback shows up.
The Teflon Tailback does show up, and where do they come with these names? I had the most touchdowns at Smallville High School until Clark broke his record.
I don't understand football, so I will admit this off the bat, but somehow they're two different positions. So he's tailback, which means that he scores. And Clark is a quarterback, so he's throwing the ball. But who gets credited for the touchdowns? Does the quarterback get credited for the touchdowns, or does the tailback get credited for the touchdowns? Because he's all like, Clark broke my record, and I'm like, but you play two different positions.
It is a little confusing. If you're not familiar with football, I totally get why you'd be confused. So a tailback is a running back.
My football familiarity is Friday Night Lights.
No, that's a great show. To answer your question, running backs, right? A tailback and a halfback, those are running backs. He's the Teflon tailback. So he scores touchdowns. He can score one of two ways, either running in, you know, crossing the plane of the end zone himself, or catching a pass from a touchdown, right? Like if a quarterback throws him the ball, he can also score.
So it's only as far as quarterbacks throwing the, like if he throws a touchdown as opposed to throwing it to somebody who then scores a touchdown.
That's not entirely true, because the quarterback can also be credited two ways. The quarterback gets credited when he throws the pass, and the receiver catches the ball. Like if a quarterback threw to a tailback, they both get credited for the touchdown. So it's a wash, right? But the quarterback can throw to all the other wide receivers and also run it in himself. Like, you know, like Clark does in a couple episodes, runs it in like halfway through the field. So I can see how the numbers would add up. And especially when both these guys are scoring at an insane pace, which they shouldn't be. Although they both claim they didn't use their powers in high school. So
right, neither of them use their powers in high school. How Clark consciously doesn't use his, like, ability to be Superman, I don't understand. But I just was confused by it. Whatever. That's it. Now you know about football, people who maybe didn't know about football before.
It would have been really, like, just so small universe or cliche if they had them have the same position. Like, yeah, I was a quarterback in high school, too. You know, I like that he played a different position, at least. So I kind of mixed it up, so.
Well, yeah, he played a different position, and I don't know. I guess Clark is now going to go and play quarterback for Met U. But yeah, he shows up at the Kent Farm because he's going to escort him to Met U, and I don't know how recruiting trips work, but this seems excessive.
Well, yeah, usually they do that when they want to convince you to, like, hey, come sign with our school. It's an independent trip. They don't like, hey, are you coming? Great, let me come get you. Like,
that's what I thought was weird, was that, like, maybe it's because, I guess, he's from Smallville. Like I said, I don't know anything about football.
I assume he's, like, a high-tier prospect, and all these schools want him. So I want to make sure, hey, what can we do to seal the deal? Let's send a guy from the team who's a local hero, who, by the way, we've never heard about before. You know, apparently.
No, not at all.
He's in college. So he's only been in college for four years. So he should have been
around. Which means he played with Whitney. He had to have played with Whitney. Yep.
Where are the Whitney references? What if Whitney hadn't died and he had to be the one to go recruit Clark to Metropolis University?
That would have been so sad. You
know? But anyway, you know, one thing I did want to say about this character: if Smallville was today and this character showed up, they would have known he was going to show up, and they would have like planted some seeds of this character throughout the season. So when he turns out to be like this, like, bad guy, you'd be like, oh god, what a twist, he's the guy from the car commercial I saw in episode 2 or something, you know. But anyway, hey, Smallville's 2005.
Yes.
Not gonna worry about it. They go to school and Lois is hanging out wearing sunglasses because she's still hungover. I guess this is the next day.
It's gotta be the same day
Jeff John said the recruit was coming tomorrow, so that must be it.
Yeah, it's got to be the same morning that she was woken up. So we don't know, like, at what godforsaken hour the cops woke her up. But, like, it takes 3 hours to get to Smallville from Metropolis, right? Is that
right now? It does. It gets shorter and shorter as the series progresses.
It does.
We are on record. So, actually, yeah, the episode that we talked about, in truth, it's a 3 hour trip.
It's a 3 hour trip because it was the whole thing about hot dogs. Yeah, so they make this 3 hour. She gets up in the morning, is woken up by the cops, is arrested, taken out of the station, somehow is arraigned, posts bail, and drives to Smallville.
Post bail using credit cards, Trisha. Does it work
you,
that
you
way?
You can do. You can yes. You, oh, can you post bail on a credit card.
That's good.
Yes.
That's good to know, listeners. If you ever find yourself in this situation,
you can post bail on a credit card.
Nice.
Yeah.
Chloe asked her how she got bail. She says, my four best friends, Visa, MasterCard, Discovery, and Amex. So.
Yeah. So, and she apparently used multiple credit cards in order to do it. So her bail was high. And then drives to Smallville to talk to her cousin about, I don't know, what am I going to do? I don't know. Look, the legal system is confusing.
It's Yes, it is. This is not Law and Order. This is not Friday Night Lights. It's not Law and Order. It's Law and Order. They are dabbling in areas that is not their wheelhouse.
So we just had to, like, converge all of these characters who are now about to drive up to meet you.
Yes. Yes, yes, the characters that are in Metropolis are now in Smallville to take the other characters to Metropolis. So that's pretty roundabout. Clark, you know, Clark and is walking around with Jeff Johns. Jeff Johns getting like the hero's welcome from all the people around. And so Clark has to go tell Chloe, "Hey, Chloe, I know we were going to ride up to meet you together, but now, you know, Jeff Johns is down here and, you know, he's my favorite comic book writer, so I'm going to ride with him. Is that cool?" And she's like, "No, Clark is
he has
totally
a nice
cool.
car."
Yeah, yeah. He has a nice car with Not OnStar, which we'll talk about. But,
Not OnStar, yeah.
I like the evolution of Chloe here because this is the same kind of stuff Clark was pulling the first two or three seasons, and she would be like jealous and upset. I mean, like think about Crush. Like, it's exactly what happens in Crush, and like throws her off, like goes off the handle. Rightfully so, though, because, you know, he was just kind of discarding her stuff. But she understands, and also she knows a secret now. So now we get our first conversation of like, oh, let's talk about your powers without you knowing that I know about your powers. And I thought this is a good way because she is my voice in this episode. She's like, "Hey, don't you think that's kind of, you know, unfair?" He's like, "What do you mean?" He's like, "Well, you're so good." He's like, "Yeah, well, that's how sports work, Chloe." And she's like, "Oh, well, I guess I didn't understand as much as I could." What? I thought this was a good little first put your toe in the water to address this with him.
Yes, and Chloe is me in all regards always throughout this entire show. I love her so much, which is why the show is complicated now. But this is exactly, I think, how my brain would have these conversations with him, because it's like, I know his secret. I can't tell him that I know his secret because I need him to tell me himself. But also, I really need him to tell me his secret, and I need to make these comments, and so I'm going to do it in a way that is like, I know your secret, but I don't know your secret, but also please tell me what your secret is, so then we can have these conversations about how I know your secret. So she's constantly like, I need to comment. I have to comment, but I have to do it in a certain way, and it's really, really ridiculous. Because she's like, oh, I'm surprised that you were going to go the football route. And he's like, why? She's like, oh, just, you seem like you're so much, you have like an upper hand on other people. And he's like, yeah, some people are better than other people. That's how sports work. She's like, right.
Nothing. But I like they can play with that, because that's a dynamic they haven't used before in the show. Someone knowing his powers.
Yeah.
Like a friend, or a family member.
Right, and not saying it. And this is, it's also, I like the way that Chloe reacts to knowing his abilities, because, first of all, she doesn't know all of them, so she's sort of figuring them out as she goes. Mm-hmm. And so she knows he's super fast, and she knows he's super strong, and that's all. And,
which are things you would think would be an unfair advantage in sports. So.
Right, in specifically football. Yes. A game that's entirely about strength and speed. Yes. But she has this whole thing where she doesn't like outright say, "Hey, by the way, your dead girlfriend told me that you have abilities." Like, she knows that he has to tell her, but it's also like playing specifically into the reason why he never told her in the first place, which is that he was worried that she would like print it. Right? Like that she would suddenly have all these opinions about his abilities, and that like he needs to talk about it, and she would make it into a front page story, because like that's been his whole paranoia this entire time.
And she doesn't play into that. And he's seen how she has treated other meteor freaks and other people with abilities. So he doesn't want to end up on the wall of weird. So
Right. Even though he is the wall of weird.
He is the cause of the wall of weird. but then we cut from our A plot to our B plot, and our continued Lex, sometimes Lex, and most of the time Lana scenes have no connection to the A plot of the episode.
Nothing at all.
This is like, I want to say like a third or fourth episode in a row where you could just take all the Lex stuff out and most of the Lana stuff out. Maybe not Scare, they all came together. But around this range of season four, Lionel's stuff too, you could take it all out and it wouldn't affect anything. Like some of these scenes are fine on their own, but they don't belong in this episode.
Right, it's entirely trying to piece together like the season long arc, which also season four's biggest problem is that the season long arc had to change in the middle because Margot Kidder didn't want to be the bad guy anymore, so they had to change it to Jason and his mom, Genevieve Teague, and which annoys the crap out of me, by the way, because season four is the only season in which I really like Lana, and it's mostly because they stopped caring about her and Clark and put her with Jason, and it works really well, where like she seems totally normal and their relationship is healthy until we need to inject this idea that he's been manipulating her the whole time.
Yes, this is where the and I made notes of this too. This is where the retconning of Jason begins because they weren't sure yet. Like when his mom shows up, they're like, "Well, we don't know if he's with his mom or against his mom. We don't know he'll Lionel out of jail yet. We're keeping everything nice and vague. We can go any direction." And this is like, okay, I guess we're not gonna, because guys, like, if you're not aware, if you're just listening to this random episode out of the blue, the arc for season four is supposed to be the Swan Foundation, Christopher Reeve. They're going to put more stuff into that. Mm-hmm. He, of course, passed away, unfortunately, at the beginning of the season, so couldn't use him. He couldn't come on the show in his character. So they had Margot Kidder come on for a couple episodes, and they were going to delve into
previous Lois Lane.
Yeah, previous Lois Lane from Superman the movies. Superman colon the movies. And
yes.
She was going to kind of fulfill that role. I'm not sure how they would have played in Dr. Swan. But she would have been the, you know, either she would have gone rogue or I don't know. But she wanted the Stones of Power. Now, she didn't want to come back and do tell the kids that Dr. Swan had died. Like, Margot Kidder felt that was weird. I don't know. I felt like it would have been handled respectfully. But, hey, I wasn't Christopher Reeve's friend and didn't know him like she did. So I understand why she was kind of too close to it to deal with that on the show.
Yeah, my understanding is that they were using his death as a plot point in the show because they had to explain why Swan wasn't going to come around anymore. And she didn't like it that they were doing that. And then so she decided she wasn't going to come back anymore as that character. And that character was meant to be the villain of the season. So now we need a new villain.
And
okay, we're going to introduce a new one. Yeah, and then they killed her off screen.
Maneuvered in Genevieve Teague here. And then she kind of took over. And that's why the whole plot falls on its face. So that's what I say. Seasons 4 and season 7, right? The two weakest seasons, I still think, even though I'm enjoying season 4 more than I thought I would. Victims of things outside their control. You know, deaths of actors, refusal to come back of other actors, and then writer strikes, and then characters leaving and actors being double-set. So I get why things kind of didn't come up the way they did. But anyway, ultimately, the subplot of season 4, the overarching arc, is really schizophrenic and weird, and this is where we really get into the point, like, Jason is not all he appears to be, because I agree with you, Trisha. I think him being a normal guy was kind of refreshing. Like, it's just this normal guy, football coach, whatever, dating this girl, you know. He gets thrown into all this stuff he didn't understand, but then when did they kind of make him, like, you know, I'm working for my mom. Where's Clark? Where are the Luthers? Where are the Crystals? And, like, this is not the guy that we liked the first half of the season.
Yeah, because he goes off the hinge in the second half of the season.
Totally.
Like, just absolutely insane. And it's just, like, oh, my God. It was unfortunate because I think Lana, her entire character arc suffers because of the amount of focus that it has on the men that she's with. And this is the first time where she was, like, in a normal relationship. And Lana's weirdly mature this season. And... Mm. She's living in an apartment by herself for reasons, and all this other stuff happens. And so I enjoy Lana in season 4, and then they threw it out the window, and it made me upset because I don't like not liking one of, like, the three women on the show.
Well, it was also my understanding that they were going to wrap up the Countess Isabel storyline with Spell. It's like, hey, she got possessed, and then she was vanquished, and that was it. But then they kind of keep bringing it back. Like, this episode, like, our research has hit a brick wall, and Jason, your mother's been researching. I'm like, okay, clearly you just taken this, like, one episode kind of building towards subplot and blown it up to the whole season arc, and that doesn't work either. But all that to say, all this conversation we're having right now is coming from the scene of Lex and Jason. This one scene has nothing. Lana's not even in the scene. But Lex had offered Jason a job in the last episode to investigate his mother, and then we kind of left it, you know, like, he didn't answer him, and then he comes in to give him an answer, and he basically says, no, why would I work for you? You investigate my family. And Lex says, look, I have limited resources, but I need access. You know, the two women in your life are intricately tied to the Countess, and you know, find out, you know, what we need to find out. I do like this line here. He's like, so you want me to spy on him? And Lex says, how you choose to get the information is up to you. So I thought that was a good comeback by Lex.
Yeah, plausible deniability, right? Lex is all about that plausible deniability. The other thing I was going to say, and I can't remember what it is. I'll think of it later. Oh, the ongoing complication of the entire Lex mythos is hilarious to me. Because, like, this is where it increases to, like, the thing about the stones that, like, we've always been investigating these things. And then in season 7, it's where you get Veritas.
And yeah, we get that stained glass window that was always there. That V was
that
always
was
there.
Definitely always there. It was always there. Why would you go back to season 1 and look? It was always there.
That is one of my favorite retcons, because it's like, really, guys? You expect me to believe that? Like, you expect me to believe that was always there?
It was always there. It was always there. Anyway, yes. Moving on from Lex.
We have a plus one hospital visit. We have Coop. He's in not the Smallville Medical Center, although it looks a lot like it. He's in Metropolis.
Perhaps
he's
it's
in
the same set.
Bed there. Perhaps. You yes. never know.
Might be.
Lois and Chloe go to visit him, and I think that's a terrible idea. What about you?
Yeah, okay. I don't know why. I mean, I guess because they're teenagers, and we frequently forget that they're teenagers because they're in their 20s. But they're idiotic, unsupervised teenagers who have decided that the solution to this is to go talk to the guy that you've been accused of assaulting.
Genius.
And you really should never, ever talk to the person that you're accused of assaulting. It does not look good for you. Does Lois have a lawyer? Probably not.
Trisha, I just want to say that you're giving all the listeners great legal advice in this episode.
Great legal advice. Now, please note, I am not a lawyer, nor am I able to give you actual legal advice. But hey, so if you don't go talk to the person you assaulted.
Yes, don't do that. And also, if you get arrested, you can max out all your credit cards to get you out of bail. So thank you. Please continue.
You can totally max out all your credit cards to get you out of jail. You can pay for bail with a credit card. Anyway, so this is a really bad idea, and I don't know why they decided to do it, except that they decided to do it. And because they're going to get clues from sympathy cards.
Yes. So that was a very Lois Lane thing to do, I must say. Like even Chloe's like, thinks that's a little much. And she's like going through all the memory cards and what am I sitting at a computer talking about this? The sympathy cards. And I have to have a shout out to my deceased grandmother on my dad's side. Her name is Grandma Betty, and that is a sympathy card from Grandma Betty to Coop here. So Chloe calls that. I was like, that's my grandma's name. That's cool.
Yes, your grandmother actually sent Coop a sympathy card.
I knew it!
Yeah, that's what it was. Yeah, but it's... So Lois knew he had a girlfriend, but didn't know who the girlfriend was, I guess, or something. Because that's the clue, right? Is like, oh, it's his girlfriend.
Yeah, it's like, oh, well, all the ones say hearts and love you forever. That must be the one from her. So then from this card, they figure out where she is, which is at the, was it
yes.
Alpha, 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 or Kappa, Kappa, Kappa?
I don't even, honestly, I don't even remember.
It was some ridiculous, like, Greek name.
I did not register the name of the sorority. I am just confused, and we'll get to this because we're not actually there yet, by the fact that they are, like, the football team's harem.
Yes, yes, that's a twitchy subject to discuss, but yeah. So we know now, much like our characters converge at Smallville High School, they're going to converge at the sorority house later because Lois yes. is on the trail.
But first
we have Clark driving around with Jeff Johns in his car, and poor naive
his
Clark
giant
doesn't
ass
understand.
Car.
Poor naive Clark doesn't understand the inner workings and shady dealings of college boosters and the favors that athletes get. And he's like, oh, you mean if I come to school here, you guys will buy me a car? And he's like, yeah, football's big business, Clark.
It is. And even though this is the NCAA and you are not allowed to get paid, boosters can give you presents, I guess. Again, sports things that I don't really understand.
No, it's interesting they're addressing this. That's like an actual real problem in college.
Yeah, they're addressing
sports.
Like huge things in college, like big issues in college sports, like the fact that athletes don't get paid and the fact that there's all this pressure to win so that you maintain the booster support and also get drafted to the NFL. And like, just a lot of college sports commentary because they had to fit it all into one episode because Clark's not going to go play college sports.
No, now's their one shot, so they're gonna take it. So Clark is like slowly seeing the darker side, if you will, of being a college athlete, because obviously
or the fun side.
Well, you know, if you want to put a positive spin on it, sure.
They're trying to put a positive spin on it, right?
Well, I don't know. I mean, this car is pretty awesome with its OnStar ripoff technology. And I actually looked up what this was called because I was thinking, like, is this a product placement? Did I miss one? You know, but no, it's called TripStar. So they wanted to use OnStar, but I guess they couldn't come to an agreement. Do you remember those OnStar Batman commercials back in the day?
Don't actually. I remember very little about the OnStar commercials. I've never actually used OnStar.
No. I've had some rent cars over the years with OnStar in them. I never had a car with like the OnStar button. But no, it was after Batman and Robin, but before Batman Begins and like that Batman Dark Ages. And they had a series of commercials. Yes, and I'll post it on social media because they're out there on the internet. You can find them. But it was Batman, and they used the Tim Burton Batmobile. But and then like Alfred Michael Goff. you know, as Alfred. And then, like, just stunt doubles and that kind of stuff to be Batman. He, like, fights the Joker and the Riddler and the Penguin and all this stuff. And then he uses his OnStar button to, like, help him out. Because he's like, yes, OnStar, how can he help you, Batman? It was, like, so ridiculous. But it's the peak, it's peak 90s right there, I thought.
Well, but peak 90s, but also, like, at that time in the comics, he never would have used OnStar. He would have used Oracle. So, obviously,
this is,
he should have pressed the OnStar button and gotten Oracle.
They were not canon. They were not in continuity. But I always think about, I think OnStar, I always think of those commercials. But anyway, they make a point. Like, he's got this trip star. He's like, oh, yeah, man. And Clark's like, oh, that's cool. He's like, oh, next year's model is going to be even better. So it's Chekhov's OnStar, because they're presenting it now in Act Whatever, so they can bring it up later in Act Whatever. So anyway, this setup will pay off.
You can't just mention that I have this virtual assistant, and not even a virtual assistant, a real ass person who I'm going to call to give me movie times. and like, they know exactly where you are, and I'm like, that's creepy, and all this other crap. And yeah, then later on, you know, you're going to have to use it, because why would we take a tour of his
his features on his car
stuff? It's not product placement.
Yeah, that's the most bizarre thing about it. Like, in the X-Files revival, I don't know if it was season 10 or 11, but it was on Fox, obviously, and Mulder's driving this Mustang, and, like, they really focus in on, like, the map and the features. I'm like, okay, somebody paid a lot of money to product place this car. Fox Mulder's driving around. But anyway, moving on. Mm-hmm. They reach their destination. Yeah. And they get to the football stadium. The football stadium, which I assume is the one football stadium in Vancouver, because it looks just like the one you've seen on The Flash, the new TV show.
It is the one football stadium in Vancouver.
The one, yeah, they must have an arena football team there or something. But anyway, impressive location shoot to go out here. So all credit to them.
Yeah.
Also impressive for Metropolis University. They have the marching band, the cheerleading squad, the coach, and all the boosters there to welcome Clark.
This one recruit is going to come in and check out all of this nonsense. And also, like, they've already got his uniform. Again, not an athlete. Really don't know what it's like to be recruited to a college. This seems like a lot.
Remember, he just won the state championship. He just won the state championship.
He just did win the state championship, which, cool. I don't know. Smallville must be Division I football. I really don't know. Obviously, he was getting a lot of, like, yeah, but Smallville is Division I. Smallville's tiny. That he would be getting this much attention. And obviously, we've seen in other episodes, right, that other colleges are, like, asking him for, like, they want to him to come play for them or whatever. He gets, like, Stanford or some nonsense.
There have been talk of scouts before. That's true.
Other scouts that have come to the games and, like, seen him play and all that nonsense.
It does seem excessive, but I buy it. Like, for like a guy that's as good as Clark, setting records and stuff, and he a local guy, they got a local connection with Jeff John, so I can see him going on. But it is pretty. They even have the announcer like, and now starting at quarterback, Clark Kent. I'm like, whoa, that's legit. So.
I could see them doing some elements of that. I just feel like as someone who was a marching band person, at least in high school, if I had to come out to like recruit one person to the football team, I would be like, no.
Okay. Have we talked about this? Have we talked about marching band before?
I don't know if we have. I don't think
I was a marching band as well. What did you? Let me guess. You played the clarinet.
I did not okay. play an instrument. Technically, I was in the color guard, but it's part of the marching band.
Okay, all right, color guard then. Okay, all right. I was gonna guess like the pit or something. Okay, cool. I played the French horn, so I'm all about the marching band life.
The French horn.
So you don't know about football when you were a marching band? I mean, you didn't osmosis.
We didn't pay attention to football. My high school football team was Division III and bad. Okay. So, no, we did not pay attention. People came to the football games to watch our halftime show, and then they left. So, yeah, football was not a thing that we paid attention to in marching band. I've seen games, and I sort of understand the rules. I don't know what all the positions do, and I definitely don't know crap about recruiting. I just feel like if I were part of the marching band and they were like, you have to come out to every recruitment thing that the team does, I would be very annoyed because I have other crap to do.
That is exactly what I thought too. It's like, really, another one? Like, it's Saturday. Let me have a life. But you know, the recruitment doesn't stop there.
Our budgets are not the same.
The recruitment doesn't stop there though, because then they take Tark to the sorority house, and it's kind of a It's played for laughs, and it is funny, but it is really twitchy, I think. So I'll let you talk about this.
It's so twitchy. Okay, the whole sorority thing makes no sense to me because so they're football players, and obviously they're going to have, especially in this like quintessential early 2000s teen show, the football players are going to date all the hot girls. So it's like, I want to know, like, does being in the sorority mean you're going to date a football player? Or when you date a football player, do you end up in the sorority? Because the sorority seems like it is the, as I said before, the harem of the football team. It is the place where, like, these are the girls you get to choose from. And it's so strange. So strange. And they made you a cake. Like, I could see, like, the cheerleaders doing that. Mm-hmm. Maybe, but not a sorority.
Yeah, because they have no affiliation with the football team.
They have no affiliation with the football team, except that like half of them date football players, and the other half are there for Clark to choose from. And like they take him upstairs.
Two of them take him upstairs. That's the thing. It's not like we're gonna pick. Okay, who's really hot and really single? Really single. Like that's the thing. You guys know what I'm saying. And wants to go seduce this recruit. I'm like, okay, but two of them.
He comes to our university. Like, this is a campus-wide commitment to the football team.
Oh, God.
What are they getting out of this is what I want to know.
Now, I must say, during the scene, though, we have last week, I was so excited. Or I guess it was 2 weeks ago now. They played in Unsafe. They played a song that is also featured on MVP Baseball 2005, which is one of my favorite video games. Okay. Lance and I talked about it. And we have another song from MVP Baseball 2005 here, Finding Out True Love is Blind by Louis XIV. And that is what we will play it out of in this episode. Because, again, this wasn't on my radar at the time. I was thinking about Simple Plan. How can this happen? How could this happen to me?
Yeah, no, I can't believe that you're not. I can't believe that you're not going to play out this episode with Simple Plans. Yeah, oh my God. Simple Plan is so 2005.
It hurts. It's 2005. It hurts so much. So.
And it's so. It's the wrong song for the moment, and they played it anyway, and I really appreciate that. We haven't gotten there yet. At the end of the episode, it's my favorite thing about this episode.
That's the song you'll all be expecting, but I have to go with MVP Baseball 2005, so if you haven't heard it before, you'll hear it now when it plays out. But I just sang Simple Plan for you guys, and it sounded pretty much exactly like it, so there you go. There's your sample.
Yes.
So it sounds exactly
like Simple Plan, circa 2005.
Thank you, Trisha. So they take him up to this room, and he's, to Clark's credit, he's being very, you know, gentlemanly. He's like, oh, wow, the view out the window is great. You know, he's trying to, like, they're coming onto him. He's trying to stop them. But then they kind of throw him down on the bed, and they start taking their tops off. It's like, whoa.
I don't understand what they're getting out of this. Like, what is the benefit to this sorority for them to essentially sell themselves for a football player? I don't get it. I don't understand. But it's happening, and it's mostly just so we can all converge on this sorority because there's a noise from the closet.
Well, I wonder what would have happened if Lois had not been in that closet, right? How far things would have gone. But they hear a noise.
I imagine not very far because it's Clark, and he does have superhuman abilities.
Yes. He's not on Red Kryptonite this week, so he'll control.
He is not on Red Kryptonite this week, yeah.
So he goes, he's like, well, let me go look. And I love, he opens the closet and he opens the closet and Lois is in there. And then he got the look on his face and immediately shuts the door. So funny.
Yes. And, yeah, I love the Clark and Lois, like, relationship early, like the early Clark and Lois relationship when they're both just sort of, they respect each other, but wow, do they wish the other one would go away sometimes.
Yeah, it's still, like, I don't know when it gets really, like, whatever, but maybe, like, seasons 5, 6, and 7. But in 4, I am kind of enjoying what it is for what it is. And he says, hey, could, because he's got these two girls here that are just offering themselves up to him, right? And he's like, hey, can I have something to drink? And then one of them leaves, and then he says, can I have something to eat? And the other one leaves, too. So he finally gets the room to himself, opens the door, and Lois explains what she's been doing, reading, Coop's girlfriend's diary.
Yes, and they, you know, it's, I don't know. Yeah, I mean, like, she riles him a little bit for, like, being there and, like, accepting whatever the hell these girls are gonna get. And then doesn't he throw her back in the closet?
He does, because he's like, back, 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 and he throws it in the closet.
Yes.
And I wonder, like, how did they get out of that situation? Because Lois is still in the closet. Fortunately, they come up with actually, like, the cake and some drinks, and there's more girls. So I assume the whole, like, we're going to seduce you to death, they kind of like, well, that wasn't working, so we'll just try another approach.
And obviously. Then they can get out of there.
Lois also then, calls him Hef in this scene, which I found was amusing. A reference to Hugh Hefner. So
Hugh
always,
Hefner
always quick
of...
with the references. Yeah, Hugh Hefner because, you know, of Playboy and whatnot. So, Playboy. And the Playboy Mansion. So, we have Jeff Johns, which again, is just bizarre that he's a character in this episode. He visits Coop at the hospital, and we have him kind of monologuing. You know, he's like, man, you were going to tell about my secret. I couldn't let that happen, you know? So it's
I have
all,
to
it's
explain this to you.
Here. Yeah, I have to explain this. I want you to understand why
I have to
I'm
explain
you.
To you. I need you to understand exactly why this is happening, because no one else is here for me to explain it to, and you can't talk. So.
And hopefully there's no cameras that record audio in this hospital room. They're not, you know. But I thought he was going to, like, smother him with a pillow or something at first, right? Because he paralyzes him some more.
Yeah, so did I.
And I was like, oh, that's because he starts to come out so he could maybe, you know, move and defend himself. So he, but
right.
No, he just
he's getting
up,
better.
He just straight up kills him with his paralyzation power. So cold blooded. This guy was his roommate and his best friend. So that is that's
but he
cold.
Was gonna tell him about his secret.
Yeah, was he like Oliver Queen? No one can know my secret, snaps his dick in the first episode. But
that's how
I will say I like the transition to a commercial here where it's like it goes to black and you hear the flat line. I'm like, okay, that was pretty
yeah.
That was pretty clever. So then
not bad at all.
Clark and Lois go to the, quote, football dorm, as Clark calls it, which I found an amusing terminology, as if such a thing
exists.
Yeah,
I could see that happening, though, them putting all the football players into one dorm.
I just like to think there's a big building with a sign that says football dorm on it. But
yes, too.
But they go out there, and Jeff looks really kind of upset, and he tells them that he got a call from the coach and Coop. Has just passed away, and Lois is with him, and she tries to kind of talk to him about it, but he's like, Clark, can I talk to you for a second? And Lois is like, hey, if you have something to say to me, say it to my face. So again, Lois stand up for himself here, but Jeff Johns, I keep saying so weird, Jeff Johns.
He wanted to call him something else.
I know, but he does look upset, and I actually buy that he's upset because his best friend is dead, but at the same time, he killed him. So I mean, he's kind of
he's the one who killed
here.
Him. I do and I don't buy that he's upset. Like, maybe he's upset that his friend is dead, but also he seems to not really have a lot of remorse for anything else he does ever in the rest of the episode, like, including trying to kill Lois and all that. So, and trying to frame her for murder, it's obnoxious. And I'm not going to give him a lot of benefit of the doubt. But, like you said, like, Lois standing up for herself, good thing. I'm a little annoyed with Clark. Although
trying to tell her to like kind of quiet down and
yeah, trying to be like, Lois, shut up. It's fine. And she's like, Clark, you're not the one who's possibly going to be going to jail for manslaughter.
Right.
Like I didn't like, and she thinks that she did it too. Like she's convinced that, yeah, it must have been something that she did. And I can't imagine that this would have caused someone to die, but like now she's dealing with all that. So Clark has a lot more sympathy for this guy he doesn't know. Whose best friend is dead, and not for this person he does know who thinks that she murdered a guy by accident.
But it's the Teflon tailback. I mean, come on.
I know, and
whose side
his
would
long,
you be on?
Flowing golden hair. I would be on Lois's side, of course.
The haircut is an interesting choice as well. I don't know if that was just the actor
well, the
or
haircut
they wanted
is,
that, but...
It's 2005.
There it is.
Yeah, and I mean, there were like...
He was on the OC, so...
He was on the OC. There were, and so, of course, he had to look like a surfer.
Of course.
Yeah, he's got surfer hair.
So our next scene, we go back to Jason and Lana's plot here.
Oh, God, I think this again.
Honestly, this scene here, there's a lot of deleted scenes in season 4 and episodes that like have lots of scenes that shouldn't have been deleted. And they look at the episode like, well, I can tell you about 2 or 3 scenes you could have taken out to put these good ones in. There are no deleted scenes in this episode, but if there were, I would have definitely switched one of them out for this scene because it's pointless. It's Jason going to tell Lana about the job, right? Lana's upset about it because she doesn't want him working for Lex because of all the drama that's ensued and Lex, like, you know... got Jason fired to begin with, and Lana's had a problem with him since that was revealed to her. But I guess they just, if we're going to get Jensen Ackles this week, like, well, we got to give him two scenes. We can't just give him one in this picture.
Right, he's a main cast member. We got to give him another scene.
Got to get our money's worth out of Jensen Ackles this week. Because you cover, so they're kind of arguing about it, and they're like, oh, well, you know, I can find out what he knows. This is when he says, like, we've hit a brick wall in our research about the Countess and all that kind of stuff. So
I'm going to be a double agent. Yeah.
Yeah, so she's upset about it, and then we cut to Lana, like, confronting Lex about it. So I think, you know, just in the interest of storytelling, you remove that scene, and you just cut to Lana talking to Lex, and obviously Jason would have told her about it. Now, if I were Jason, like, I don't know what his allegiances are, where his head is at this point, because he's a bad guy, apparently, as of this episode, but why would he even tell Lana that? You know? I mean, he shouldn't have told her about the job,
well,
you know, right?
I think he does care about Lana, but I think he's... Like, because he does fight with his mom about his relationship with Lana. So I think he actually does care about Lana. But I also think that he wants to be able to also do his family's work. I don't know. His allegiances are, I think, dual at this point. So he wants to be truthful with Lana, except about the things that she would actually care about.
Oh, yeah, that's like, a good point.
The thing that Lex is about to tell him. Which
right.
is that I took these lovely stalkery surveillance photos.
Yeah, so Lana barges into the... Who do you think she is, Clark? Like, barging into Luther Mansion. Who the hell do you think you are? Like,
how does Lex not have security? Is she on a list?
I guess Clark and Lana are on the list, you know.
They must be on a list.
Lex has terrible security. That's been established, but still, you're,
that's
there's
true.
So many people always barge into here.
He gets shot several times.
You'd think his dad would not be on the list, but he also seems to barge in all the time. By the way, Lionel apparently lives on the mansion now. We haven't seen him in a couple episodes, but hopefully we will again at mm-hmm. some point. But basically, Lex says, look, Lana, I care about your well-being, and if you want to know the truth, let me know. We can have a real conversation about this. So it just mm-hmm. kind of sets up the last scene. It's just stretching
right,
things out unnecessarily. You know, if you were talking about efficient storytelling, this would have come out now. But you're right, Lex did have his presentation ready with his folder and the spy photos.
Spy Manila folder.
So then we cut to back to the stadium, because where else would you have the wake for Coop than at the like a press box of the football stadium, right, Trisha?
Obviously, it's in the press box of the stadium. It makes total sense. It would be there. And it's a totally separate thing from anything else that they would do. And also, they're having a wake immediately after he's died. There's no funeral yet.
Because this is the same weekend. This is moving quickly, right?
Is this even a different day? Like, I feel like it's the same day. This
it's
day
the
is never
days
ending.
Back.
It's. I mean, I don't. I'm sure you're aware of this as a comic book fan, but in Metropolis, it's never night.
That's right. Gotham City is never day, and Metropolis is
Gotham
never night.
City has all of the night. And Metropolis has all of the day. They just got mixed up somewhere along the way. And yeah, so it's never night in Metropolis. It's just always like somewhere around 2:30.
Very good. So Jeff Johns, again, I keep checking. It's just strange for me. But Jeff Johns, he offers a toast. Because I know what Jeff Johns looks like in my head. And there's a disconnect between this surfer dude from the OC and Jeff Johns. But anyway... Jeff Johns offers up a toast to his fallen roommate, who he killed. Let's not forget. And everybody, you know, has a beer and all that. So he comes over to Clark. He's like, hey, you never had a beer before? And Clark's like, sure I have.
This is like a school-sponsored event.
Yes.
They're passing with beer.
Alcohol to these underage kids. Now, here's the deal, right? Earlier in the episode, you know, Jonathan did tell Clark, hey, I don't want you doing keg stands and all this kind of stuff. And Clark's like, it's okay, Dad. Alcohol doesn't affect me.
I can't get drunk.
Yeah. And Jonathan says, it's not the point, son. The point is you're underage. And I agree with Jonathan.
Yeah.
Actually, I'm old fashioned. I'm square. Call me what you will. I was disappointed that Clark, like, had a beer. You know, I thought, like, you know, just don't have the beer, Clark. You're 17, 18, whatever age this show tries to make me believe you are, 25-year-old Tom Welling. But at this point, 27, 28-year-old Tom Welling.
He's 28-year-old Tom Welling. He's 24 in the first season.
So I don't. Did it bother? Am I just being like stick in the mud? Did it bother you that Clark had the beer with him at the end?
It didn't bother me at all that Clark had the beer. I was just confused about it being like a school sponsored event in which they're like, here, have alcohol, and it's fine. You're only 18, and someone that we're like the university is responsible for right now. It was just strange from that angle. I don't care about him drinking at all because he can't get drunk. I don't know why, if you can't get drunk, you would bother trying alcohol at all, because it's gross. But Yeah, I don't care. Also because he looks like he's 30.
It's interesting that he knows he can't get drunk. I'm like, at what point did you just really try to get drunk, 17-year-old Clark Kent?
Right, did anyway. He? There has to have been a right? moment where, like, he and Pete are hanging out one day just being like, how much beer can you drink? Having fun with it.
Make that an episode of the Chloe Chronicles. That's cheap to produce. But anyway, we have a kind of an explanation a little bit. We're starting to peel back the reasons why Jeff Johns is doing what he does, because he tells Clark, hey, you know, because Clark's like, hey, man, you want to slow down? Because he just chugs his beer straight up and opens another. And he's like, Clark, mm-hmm. you know, playing for Metropolis U, it's a whole other ball game, man. You know, just you're under a lot of stress. They want you to be a superhero out there and all that kind of thing. And you're like, not that you're like sympathizing with him, but you're just understanding more his motivation. You can see how he's cracked under this pressure, and that's why he's doing what he's done.
Yeah, I mean, so I feel for the character and the pressure that he's under, but I just, like, he's wrong. Like, I'm glad that it never really casts him as much more than a villain. Mm-hmm. Like, they're never like, yeah, it was okay that he did that because he was under a lot of pressure. Yeah, like, no, he was under a lot of pressure and he made the wrong decision.
Right, exactly. Like, you understand his motivation, so he's not just some, it's because he's crazy and he's doing stuff, but you never say, right. Oh, well, he had a bad day. You know, you never go to that route.
Yeah.
So that's good, at least. Mm-hmm. But you know, speaking of him using his powers inappropriately, this guy shows up at the wake, you know,
yes.
to go talk to Jeff Johnson. They go outside. You know, he takes him in plain view.
Do you not conduct your urine-related business at a wake? Is that not what you're supposed to do?
I told you never to call me here. He tries to go deal with this guy, quote unquote, in private. They just go like 3 feet
around
outside
the corner.
And the glass, or everybody can see him. So the Clark uses a super hearing. Now, the super hearing effect is an ever evolving effect on the show. They've kind of melded a couple of effects now, because we see, you know, the zoom in on the ear. And then we see the lips, but then we also see sound waves coming off the lips. It's kind of a combination of what we've seen before and what we'll see later. They never quite really figure it out, to be honest. Like, I think my favorite, if I had to pick one, would be the one where just the sound waves coming to his ear. Because that's all I don't need to see his eardrum and all that crap.
I like the eardrum thing because I think it's just, I think eardrums are cool. But it's, I definitely have a lot of sympathy for the people who are trying to be like, how do we do a visual representation of hearing? Mm-hmm. How do you make that visual? Everything else is very visual.
But it feels like CSI to me. You know, that's the
no,
body
yeah.
zoom in.
No, I get that. I mean, you get that, and then eventually when he gets microvision, you get that too. But
yeah.
Like the weird CSI angle of it. But like I said, everything else, all of his other powers are very visual. Mm-hmm. Although like the pre-CGI, like it's something that I think about all the time when I'm watching Supergirl, is I would love to watch the dailies where it's just like stare intensely.
The heat vision stuff, yeah.
All the heat vision stuff is just stare while angry.
Yell and scream.
While staring, because you can't blink.
Yeah.
Yeah, like, just all that stuff. But at least that's visual, whereas, like, hearing is so hard to make visual. So them trying out a bunch of different things.
That's a good point. I have sympathy for the special effects team now that you bring it up. That's an excellent point.
It's like, just zoom in on his ear. It's fine.
Yeah, it's just fine. Let's just stock footage of the eardrum CGI we did back in 03. It's fine.
Right, exactly.
We see Jeff Johns kind of, you know, we see what's going on here. This is the guy that's mm-hmm. providing urine samples. This is a very common thing for athletes to use performance-enhancing drugs. Again, Smallville tackling all the big issues this week, right?
They have to tackle every single one because they're never going to do sports again.
This is it. So
they've done sports betting already. Now they're going to do the rest of it.
That's true. That's true. They have. Where's Mr. Piddle-pittle-lick when you need him here? But we have this guy, he's giving his urine samples to Jeff Johns, so when he's tested, it doesn't come out as urine. Now, I don't know if you're a meteor freak, if it would come out any differently. Like, I mean, if you're an alien like Clark, I get it, because him and Pete doing, like, switching the swabs in the mouth for DNA. I get that, but urine samples, I don't know. I guess he just doesn't want to risk it, so he's paying off this guy.
He probably has no idea how it works. Like, I think that we've sort of established that the meteor only shows up in like blood and like things with DNA, whereas like for the urine sample, they're just testing it for drugs. But I could see him being like overly cautious if that's the thing he's gonna have to do all the time.
Mm-hmm. No, it makes sense. But this is not the time or the place, you know. Like
it really isn't. This is a wake.
Yeah, this is a funeral. And Jeff even tells him, like, you know, like, hey man, I find you don't find me. But he hasn't been paid yet, So that's the deal. If you're going to do this nefarious activity, you got to pay the people helping you out because they're going to be the ones to sell you out in the end.
Pay your freelancers. Okay? Just do it. Pay them. You have them do work for you. You got to pay them. Otherwise, they're going to give you crap.
See, life lessons from Shisha. That's the third one.
Life lessons. So this is another legal thing, right?
I hope you guys
pay your freelancers.
Because you were nothing without your freelancers or your employees. So take good care of, take good care of your people, and they'll take good care of you. But then he gets urine sample guy out of there. I think Marcus was his name. And I don't remember that.
They call him a bunch of other stuff. They call him like the pee peddler.
The peewee.
They call him so many things. I did not clock a name. And this is like the fifth or sixth time I've seen this episode. I don't remember the dude's name.
Oh, but so Jeff kind of issues at him. Now, Clark saw Jeff touch him, and then the guy kind of collapsed, and then he gets back up. He's like, what happened to me? He's like, oh, you just fell, whatever. You know, everybody saw. Get out of here. So Clark makes note of this. And then he goes to Lois, his dorm, where Chloe is filling out her financial aid. That's like the
Chloe's there entirely to talk to somebody about financial aid. She's like, I have to get financial aid. And I don't know. Like, I was looking at colleges around the same time, and that was not a thing that I ever thought I could do, like go to a college and be like, hey, you need to give me money to come here.
Yeah, it's the
she hasn't even been accepted
D
yet.
Plot. That's true. It's the underrated D plot of this episode is Chloe's attempt to get financial aid.
to get them at you.
I would have rather seen more of that than more Jason and Lana and Lex talking about Stones of Power scenes, but that's just me. But
yeah.
Oh, Clark pretty much tells him, like, hey, I think I know what happened here. And he talks about Jeff Johns, and they talk about how, like, no one's going to believe you outside of Smallville. Like, this might be common, you know, it might be common in Smallville. Oh, yeah, well, so-and-so is a bug now, so we got to deal with that. That doesn't happen in Metropolis.
Two different people are bug-related.
Who's the second bug?
There's the guy who is just Bug man. Boy. And then there's the girl who is the Queen Bee.
Oh, yes. Both from season one, yes. Very good. That when you don't know what powers you give someone, just make them an insect. You know, it's good
enough
for Jeff Goldblum.
Insects have so many powers.
It's, exactly. If you run out of X-Men powers to give people, just look at insects. They'll have plenty
it's
of powers.
Just insects.
You, so.
Yeah.
So they figure out that that they're going to divide and conquer here.
Oh, yes.
Clark's going to go do some investigating. Then Lois and Chloe will do the same. This is where Clark drops his, I'm going to go to the football dorm and investigate. But again, it just sounded funny. I'm sure that's a normal thing to say, but to me, it just sounded funny.
It's possible. And yeah, it does sound hilarious.
So Chloe's going to go look in the dorm, and Lois is going to go confront, again, I believe his name is Marcus, or Pee-wee, or the pee-peddler, or whatever. And she goes up to the guy. She's like, I love what she said. She says, excuse me, do you know where I can find some clean number one around here?
Yeah, it was just, I think, the right way to do it. It's Lois. It's perfectly in line with her character. Chloe decides she's going to go into the dorm without a key card.
Yes.
For reasons. It takes her a really long time to figure out she needs a key card to get in because, Lois asks the pee peddler what's up with the pee. And then she's like, I need to talk to you about Jeff Johns. And then he's just behind her.
Yeah. Horror movie style.
He's
standing right behind me, isn't he?
Yeah. And it's like, oh, yeah, she tries to play it off all like, I just wanted to know if you were going to play for the Metropolis Sharks, because I'm a big
I guess we'll have to wait and see, like next year, like everybody else. See you later. Like, she at least has the presence of mind to get out of there. You know,
yeah,
I feel
to
like
get
in
the
a lot,
hell out.
In a lot of these episodes of Lois on Smallville, like, they make her kind of dumb in these situations where she has to, like, do dumb things to get, like, kidnapped and stuff. And I feel like, good. Here she's still smart, so she makes the right choice, gets out of there.
Trying to walk away, and then he grabs her, obviously, and does his thing, and paralyzes her, and then drags her into a car.
He monologues to her to kind of justify. He's like, look, in high school I didn't use my powers, but the pressure was just too big here in college, so I'm sorry, but I have to kill you now. It's like, oh, well, thanks for explaining that to me.
Yeah, and is this the... Does he do it now, or does he do it when he's talking to Clark, where he's like, he was going to tell, and I had to kill him?
He either does it both times, because what he says to Lois here is very similar to what he says to Clark at the end of the episode.
Okay, yeah, but at the end, really right, drive home.
He explains to Clark why he killed his roommate, you know.
Right. Anyway, so he just drags her into his car and, like, takes off, and this is the middle of the day, because it's always 2:30 in Metropolis. And no one sees him do this and no one's concerned.
Well, as Chloe said, he's like a god among women on campus. They're not going to question the great Geoff Johns.
I guess so, dragging a woman into his car. So that's totally fine.
You know, all jokes aside, it happens more often than anything.
No, it probably does happen far too often, especially in college campuses. But I'm just so annoyed with all of these people on this college campus. But yeah, Chloe finally figures out she needs a key card to get in and comes out to ask Lois and then sees his car taking off, which of course his license plate says Teflon. It does. And then she starts shouting for Lois and I'm like, you don't just assume that she's been taken in the car?
Well, she doesn't know what he wasn't there when they got there, like that car.
Right, but right? That's definitely his car.
But you know what? Yeah, this is why Chloe does not become the investigative reporter we all thought.
Yeah, but she does find Lois's sunglasses and now it's
Chekhov's
like,
sunglasses.
She must have been
it's all paid
car.
Off. There's so many pages. Just, see, Lois wore the sunglasses in Act 1, so in Act 3, when Chloe finds them, she knows. It's the clue she needed.
She knows they're Lois's sunglasses.
Show is brilliant with setups and payoffs, let me tell you.
It really is. Although she seems, like, not as concerned as I might be if I just discovered that my cousin had been abducted by a
by the person we just player. Know killed his best friend and roommate. Yeah, that's a red flag.
Yeah, it's just a little bit. Granted, so, they've all been abducted several times by now, so...
That's true. We'll get over it. Yeah, listen, this has happened to me 4 or 5 times already, honey. Listen.
It's fine. Let's find Clark.
Yeah, let's find Clark. Clark and Chloe start talking about Tripstar. Again, the payoffs are just brilliant this episode.
We're in the final act. We got to do it.
Because Chloe's like, how are we going to find him? He's like, well, not necessarily. There's a PIN code to the dealership, and if we get in there and we get the PIN code, we can call in and use it, and they can tell us where we are.
And Chloe, he's like, I'll go get it. And she's like, what are you going to do? Run in there and rip open the safe?
And he's like, of course not. Like, in the most unconvincing way possible.
And then he runs in there and rips open the safe.
Yeah, because, again, we're led to believe that's exactly what he does, because the next time we see him, they're in the dorm room again, and Chloe's like, that was a quick errand,
She's
Clark.
Like,
he's
that
like, well,
was
I
really
rushed.
Yes, I hurried.
While he was doing that, Geoff was setting up... Lois's demise there, and he takes her like to the bottom of like a sewer, turns on some water, and he says, don't worry, it'll be quick. It's like, oh wow, that's very considerate of you.
Like, no, you are forcing this girl to drown slowly in a sewer. Like, that's not quick or kind or anything. It's just mean. Can't you just do the exact same thing that you did to your buddy? Right.
Well, maybe they don't want to find the body, because he had already pinned his buddy's injury on Lois. So if he dies in the hospital, it's like, okay, well, that was weird. But if Lois just disappears and they find a dead body. So Lois does mention later, like, she would have been washed out into the Mississippi. So I guess this is some kind of, you know, drainage tunnel that she's in or something like that.
I don't know. I don't know if that was actually a truthful sentence that Lois was saying, or if it was just her making some hyperbole, as she tends to in conversation.
Very true. Very true. It's like a James Bond villain death trap. It's like, here, I'm gonna turn
really
on this
is.
Faucet of water,
I mean,
and then I'm gonna leave.
It's entirely like a time release death, so that Clark can save her. Like, that's the entire reason. Like, there is no other reason than so that Clark can eventually save her, and she's not like definitely dead, because we know that like his ability is deadly, and he could have just killed her that way and then thrown her in the sewer.
Very true.
Yeah, and she still would have been
washed out. It's all starting to fall apart, Trisha. It's all.
I know.
To
I'm
apart.
Sorry. I'm pulling at the threads.
this great tapestry of an episode.
So, moving on. So this is when Clark and Chloe.
They call Tripstar, and yes. Clark has to impersonate Geoff Johns. He's like, "Oh yes, I'm driving down Third Street, and this is how
I took a wrong turn. I'm in Metropolis. I took a wrong turn, and."
My
I don't know where I am.
Broken.
There are no street signs and my screen is broken. Can you tell me where I am?
And then like, absolutely, Mr. Johns, you're at whatever and whatever. And then he super speeds over there. Now, I love how he like deepens his voice, because I feel like, you know, everybody feels like their voice is deeper than it is. So when you hear a recording yourself, you're like, oh my God, I talk like that. And, you know, when I first started like, you know, podcasting, I was like, all right, I'm gonna try and talk like this at all times.
This
you know,
is my radio voice.
Hello, welcome to Always Swell in the Smallville. I'm your host, Zachary Moore, right? Zachary, right? It's more professional. Then say, hey, I'm Zach Moore, Always Swell in the Smallville. That's how I really sound. I'm like, oh my God, this is me. But anyway, And then, you know, and then if I answer the phone and I don't know who it is, I'm like, hello. But if it's people, like, the longer I talk, the higher and more the energetic I get. So anyway, I threw that out the window real quick, podcasting, because I want to be high energy. And to do that, you know, you gotta give it all. Right. You can't put on a fake voice. So anyway, all exactly. That to say.
I'll have to say that Clark lowers his voice on the phone to sound like this other football player.
It's a good thing, Trisha, though, that Chloe knows Clark's secret, because if she didn't, it'd be pretty obvious that he just disappeared from this room that only the two of them were in. Like, Clark, what do you think she thinks when you do these things? Like, usually he would
Clark
at least
is
be
really
in a crowd.
Bad at hiding his ability. Yeah. Clark is very bad at hiding his abilities. He's just like, she's like, yeah, we figured out where she is. So Chloe like looks away for a second and she's like, so I guess we better get over there, and turns around. And she's like, Clark. And then just smiles, because she knows where he went.
Mm-hmm. And then Geoff Johns getting in his car, but then Clark just pulls him out of the car through the window, which is very impressive. Mm-hmm.
I think so too. And again, not really hiding his abilities there, because normal humans.
At least didn't rip off the door. At least I give him credit for that.
He didn't rip off the door. Yes, you have to give him credit for not ripping off the door, because at least Geoff was riding around with his window down. Even though throughout this entire episode it's been raining.
Oh, man. Let's just keep pulling on those threads. So.
Yes. No, he's just got his window down. He's got Clark runs over there. He rips, pulls the guy out. He's unfazed, I guess. And yeah. And now
I like how angry.
It's confession time.
I like how angry Clark gets here. He's like, tell me where she is. Where is she? I'm like, that's good. Seem passionate about this.
I like impassioned Clark. I like more than just like, no, it's fine. He's just so nice. He's too nice sometimes. He's a little too nice. But yeah, he really needs to know where Lois is, because even though they make fun of each other and he shuts her into closets several times, he cares. He needs to know. And I mean, okay, so in another version of this episode, to go back to what we were talking about at the beginning, in another version of this episode, Clark is freaking out because he just lost someone. And he doesn't want to lose other people. But that is not this episode.
that's a natural follow-up that fits in episodic storytelling, but also fits in a greater arc-based storytelling, which they just weren't really... Look, they were juggling a lot of things here, all right?
They were juggling a lot of things.
Margo Kidder wouldn't come back. They got to bring in Dr. Quinn, Medicine Woman. All right, give them a break, okay?
they were dealing with so many horrible things. They couldn't also deal with the fact that Clark has to have some kind of fallout of his girlfriend dying. Horribly, being horribly murdered.
And forgive me if we didn't go into enough like this is terrible in our last episode, but is that not the worst death in small history? Just graphically and gruesomely.
It's graphically, gruesomely, yeah, it's an awful, awful death. And it's also, he's Smallville's version of racist, right? He's the guy who wants to kill meteor freaks because they're different and wrong. So he just murders people, and he eventually murders Alicia for the same reason. And it's like, I think it's awful. And it's like, but like that kind of villain, right? That kind of villain is horrific in a different way.
Purely because of who she is and not necessarily.
Yeah. Killing her for who she is, for the fact that she has meteor abilities, and doing it in such a horrible way. And Clark finding her. Like, all of that was just so, so awful, and there is no fallout. And that does bother me. And this is a perfect example of a time when they could have done, like, some element of fallout, right? He's been traumatized by this experience. He needs to make sure that no one else dies.
That's a great find right there. And with one more pass of the rewrite, maybe they could have tied those dots together. But unfortunately, they don't. And Geoff Johns continues to like defend himself here, and you kind of see Clark's realization, because he's like, look, I didn't want to use my powers, but the pressure was too great. I had to, you know. And Clark's like, oh crap, this is what's gonna happen to me too. Like, you see it on his face when he's like holding him there. Yeah. Like, oh, okay. So this is when, if he was getting to be on the fence before, this is what pushed him over the edge to quit. But then he goes off to save Lois. The music here stuck out to me. Like, it got really like, you had some gongs and some bells. It got really triumphant of Clark just going down the sewers, and it felt. I don't know. Like, it felt kind of didn't match what I was seeing on screen, but hey, good for you, musical score.
The music in this episode is interesting and all over the place. But the intention is there, so there's that. Mm-hmm.
Clark does use all his powers, though. He uses his heat vision and his super strength. And I thought he could have just thrown off the door, but using the heat vision to blow open the door, the cage that blocked she's behind, was pretty cool.
For reasons. We haven't used heat vision yet this episode, and he used the hearing, so we might as well use them all, I guess.
Oh, and we use X-ray to see Lois in the closet, so.
We've seen almost all
the powers this week.
Yeah. But still no tights, no flights.
No, never.
So it's, I don't know, it's a good rescue. I like it. And it's, there's a thing with, like, the various ways in which Lois is kidnapped and needing to be saved, and I like the ones that are as a result of her cockiness. Because that's the most Lois thing.
Well, and that's what I was kind of referencing earlier. Like, I think they kind of write her to be kind of put herself into stupid situations to get her to this
point.
But in this episode, it made sense.
Right. Like, the fact that she was being cocky at this party is the reason that she ends up in the drinking contest. I mean, we don't see what actually gets her into the drinking contest, but guarantee you it's that she was being cocky. And, you know, that's what leads to the confrontation afterwards. It's why she kicked the guy. It's the reason why she gets framed. And then the reason why people believe that she could have done it, right? And then eventually her being cocky and going around and asking the questions that she does is the thing that gets her on the wrong side of Geoff Johns' powers. And the slowly, like, watching yourself die while immobile is almost a perfect metaphor for someone who is overconfident, right? Like, you physically can't move. So I appreciate any time that they, like, really work in the character to the way that they're about to die.
that's a good find right there. It's a good catch. And also, in Smallville, The Official Companion, season 4, Erica Durance had a few words to say about this scene. She said, quote, "I think I scared the crew a couple of times. I have this thing. For some reason, I don't like putting my face in water. And I get real panicky about it. After a few takes of going up and having a breakdown and freaking out the crew because they don't know what this girl's doing, I kind of warm to it a bit. But it's just a very odd physical reaction I have." So good for her for, you know, putting herself in this situation. Because you see him. She's just completely submerged, her face. You just think about that. And yeah, if you have a fear of water, this is not a scene that you want to do. So, you know, interesting that she conquered her fear and got the scene done as well.
She does. She conquers her fear. Clark comes in, pulls her out. She's safe now.
They have a completely platonic embrace. And
she's not paralyzed anymore?
Well, it wears off, you know.
Right, but, like, conveniently.
But it's the tapestry of the episode is unraveling before our eyes. So then we get a great scene here next with Clark and the Kents, and he's finally realized what we've been saying for 3 years now, that he shouldn't be playing football. You know, his mom's like, "Oh, well, Clark, you love it so much," and all that. He says, "Look, this guy, he thought he could do it. You know, I'd have to." It's interesting. He says, "I would have to, like, lie about everything and every aspect of my life, and I don't want to do that." Of course, he ends up doing that as Clark Kent and Superman. So that's kind of unintentional.
But I feel like he feels almost like he would have to lie harder as someone who's playing football because there's an element of shame to it. Whereas, like, when he's being Superman, he's helping people. He's not doing it for, like you said in the beginning, like, for his own glory or edification.
Mm-hmm. Well, Jonathan, you know, he has a great line here. He says, "This shows an integrity well beyond your years," to Clark, to quit playing football. So, all about it. Now, there is a concern here about getting into college because he was going to get scholarships from athletics. And this is, again, they always go back to this. The Kents are doing the bills, and you see they got the calculator out and looking concerned. It's like a shot of the bills due, and, you know,
the Jonathan feed and seed.
Jonathan says, "Clark, you know, whatever college you want to go to, you and your mother will find a way to send you there." And it's like, well, can we get over the Kents having financial problems at this point? Doesn't Lex Luthor own the farm now? Like, did we forget about that? Like, I just don't, I don't know.
I can never track, like, exactly who owns what and who owes other things to the Kents. I think the financial thing works very well because, I mean, the American farm is a very difficult, especially a family farm, is a very difficult thing to have. The Kent farm is, you know, hugely iconic, so it constantly being in trouble is interesting. But also it plays well for Jonathan because it's the way he provides for his family. And he doesn't want to feel like he owes anyone anything. He needs to be able to do it himself. Like, his family's always done this, so he can do it too. And, yeah, it's it's bigger than just the farm. I don't mind the farm being in financial trouble being an ongoing concern. There are some times where it's better done than others, and you know, it's interesting. I'm surprised that Clark wouldn't get any other financial aid.
That's true. Well, it just pops his head up when it's like convenient, and then it just is never.
Oh no, yeah, it's not. So. It's not like an ongoing. It's not like an ongoing small anxiety in the back of every episode. It's like, no, this is the plot.
Yeah.
Anytime it comes up, it's there's a reason, yeah. Right? It's like all the cows died, or we're going to continue to debate whether or not we're going to rent out the back 40.
The back 40.
The back 40 comes up so many times, and I'm like, is anyone actually using it? Because you keep talking about renting it out, and then it never gets rented out.
Oh, boy. That's great. So then we get to Lex and Lana's scene. We get the second part of the scene that should have happened earlier. And Lex has come to Lana's place where Jason lives or doesn't live. This has been a... No one's really sure if he lives there or not. He's there a lot. But anyway, Lana's apartment above the Talon. And he tells Lana, look, here's the deal. Jason knows all about the Countess. His mother took him on vacations around the world, expeditions around the world, I should say, archaeological digs to research this Countess. He's grown up knowing about her. And here's a picture of him and his mom one day before you guys met in Paris. So... And she's like, oh, but I don't believe it. He's like, look, Lana, I mean, here it is. You know, so what did you think of this shocking revelation?
I think, again, no, we're just back to it being stupid. This whole idea of them suddenly being the villains. Like, now we need to not trust Jason. And now Lana needs to not trust Jason. And the worst version of Lana is paranoid Lana. And that's the only version that we get with this character, right? Like, you're dating someone who has been lying to you. And now we're going to work with Lex to figure out what he's been lying about or something.
Well, it's interesting. Lex is, as he does, right? He's kind of playing both sides, right? He's getting Jason to get info from Lana and his mom. He's talking to Lana to try to let her know about Jason. So Lex has kind of injected himself into this. And he's, he has this whole weird relationship with Lana, which continues to go down that path, and I'm not a fan of. But he has his own motivations, I guess, in this. But here we go. This is the official, like, we're already questioning, like, at what point did Jason become a bad guy? This is where the retcon officially starts. Now we'll keep an eye on it for the rest of the season. I don't know how it really, if you think back to the first half, I don't know how this tracks, because you have scenes with him and his mom, and it's like, were you guys on the same page? There's no one else here. You guys can talk honestly, you know?
Right. But yeah.
Yeah. I don't know. So there you go. But I can't wait to see the next development from Dr. Quinn, the medicine woman, Lana Lang, and Dean Winchester.
From evil Dr. Quinn. Evil yeah. Dr. Quinn.
So we have our second to last scene here, and Lois comes to visit Clark in the loft, and this is where she mentions, hey, maybe you should have a dorm up here, you know, a door, got college on the
maybe mind. Maybe you should have a door.
And she's been cleared of all charges, but still kicked out of Metropolis University because it wasn't her first time on the disciplinary committee. She's been doing this stuff for a while. And
she was drinking, and she is, you might have forgotten, 19 years old.
Yes. There's much debate about Lois's age, but yeah, apparently if this is her freshman year, as the beginning of the season established, even though other facts say otherwise, she's apparently 19.
There are other facts. There are only the facts that we are given. The facts are that she is 19.
and she's like, well, I could live out of my car, or because Clark's like, why don't you just go stay with Chloe?
I love Lois guilting Clark into letting her stay with the Kents. Also, I love the fact that Clark is the only one that needs to sign off on it. She doesn't go to the Kents, she goes to Clark. But her whole, like, Lois guilting Clark into doing something is one of my favorite things because it's very funny. And her being like, yeah, you know, I guess I'll just live in my car, and the back seat's really comfortable as long as you curl up, and she's gonna live in a motel, and then when the money runs out, she's gonna live in her car because the back seat's comfortable, but you have to avoid the drivetrain. And then eventually, you know, if I have to sell my car for food, that'll be fine because I've always wanted to, you know, be a hobo and live on the rails and eat beans heated over a fire. Clark's like, I guess you can stay here.
Yeah, he doesn't even finish saying that. She's like, okay, great, thanks.
Great, thanks.
I've been waiting for a hot shower.
I'm gonna go take a shower. And because Clark, the only room that we see in this house is the bathroom.
And then Clark has to sleep on the couch pretty much the rest of the season, as I understand it. I mean, that's
right,
what
because
I recall.
This is a farmhouse. Yeah, Clark, she lives in Clark's room.
Yeah.
And Clark sleeps on the couch, I'm pretty sure, for the rest of the season. And it's weird.
Yeah, what if she went through all his stuff and found a necklace too? But
like, first of all, he's sleeping on the couch and not sleeping in his fortress. He doesn't get cold.
You have an awesome couch and all the stuff up there.
All of your stuff is there anyway. Yeah, I don't know. I'm surprised they don't have a third bedroom.
Yeah, I don't know. I need to look at the floor plan for that actual house and see what the problem is. But yeah,
because it's not a small house.
Yeah, it's a two-story. You think it would at least have... You think it would be the master bedroom would be downstairs, you would assume. And then a couple of bedrooms and a bathroom upstairs. So we'll see. I'll have to get the blueprints on that. But
they have a big open floor plan down below. They've got their living room and their foyer and their den, I guess. I don't know.
So you like now that Lois is going to live there?
Yes, I like that Lois is going to live there. I like Clark having to hide his secret from someone he lives with. Especially when it's someone like Lois who's just nosy as hell. But I also love Lois, and this is the episode where she joins the cast full time. Hmm. She was in the previous episode, and she's in this episode.
You know, in town to see Chloe a couple times, and that's
there's karaoke.
I love rock and roll.
Yes, there's Joan Jett karaoke, and Lois accidentally saying things into a microphone and putting her foot in her mouth. But this is officially the Lois is here. She's not going anywhere. We've been trying her out, and now she's back. and she's right. Like, what if she hadn't worked out?
Yeah.
Like, oops. I guess we will go back to that fan idea that Chloe is actually Lois.
There you go. Yeah, it's like, well, we'll never see that Lois again. Now, speaking of. Our next scene with the current Lois on the show, Chloe, is at Smallville High School. And we got a plus one for a blue shirt, red jacket, because Clark's wearing his pseudo Superman costume. Chloe lets him know that she got into Met U. She's very excited. She's like, hey, we can carpool together now. And hey, will you still talk to me when you're big man on campus and the star quarterback? And he says, no, Chloe, well, I'm not going to Met U. She's like, oh, really? Why? He's like, yeah, it's just football. It's just not for me. And she's like, wow, I'm really proud of you, Clark. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And he's like, why? You've been saying a lot of weird things to me lately. Is everything okay?
But like, wouldn't she be nicer to him since his girlfriend died in the last episode?
Again, plenty of opportunities to bring it up.
So many opportunities to bring it up, and so few times that it gets brought up. So few meaning zero. It gets brought up zero times.
Now she does kind of ape the line from Jonathan Kent, both Jonathan Kent and Superman the movie and Smallville, like, you're destined to do and score touchdowns. Yeah.
Yeah, when you mentioned that at the beginning of the episode, I was like, "Oh, that's literally what Chloe says at the end of this episode is that she, that he's destined to do more than just, you know, throw a football," and then he's like, "How do you know what I'm destined to do?"
Yeah, exactly. Who are you, Jor-El? So the word destiny. You
know, you've been talking to my dad.
Yeah, both my dads.
Both my dads. So. Are you in cahoots with my dads?
So. You know, Chloe, again, like, it kind of has come full circle from that first conversation they had kind of in the hallway there. So it's a nice kind of booking conversations because back in the hallway, kids in the hall of Chloe questioning the fact that he would play football and then, giving him the thumbs up and like, hey, I'm proud of you because you made the right choice, even though he doesn't know why she thinks he's made the right choice. It's nice encouragement for him and reinforcement of the choice he's made. But it's Smallville, so we have to end with a pop song and Clark walking away slowly.
Oh my God. Why? I don't know why. This song, I love this song because it is so 2005. It's amazing.
How could this happen to me?
Simple Plan.
I made my mistakes.
Simple Plan, How Could This Happen to Me? Which is so emo. It's so sad and like everything is horrible and my life is awful and how could this happen to me? And I'm like, Clark, you did this to yourself?
Yeah, the only thing missing from this scene, Trisha, is rain, and it's because it's a covered stadium.
Yes.
If only it was an open roof stadium, and he could have walked away in the rain.
If only it was raining. If only it was raining. It's such an oddly placed song. It doesn't fit the tone. I don't, like, he's bummed, but nothing happened to him.
It would have been more appropriate at the end of the last episode where his girlfriend had died.
Yeah, I guess it would have been appropriate there.
But it's too emo even for that, but anyway.
This song is whiny. This song isn't sad. It's whiny. I mean, the line is literally, how could this happen to me? And it's just, I hate this song so much. I love it and I hate it. It's a terrible song that is so peak 2005 emo high school kid. But it does not fit this episode at all. Like, how could this happen to me is not the tone of this episode. This episode is, I'm making mature decisions. Yes.
There are plenty of small episodes that would have fit in better.
Yes.
I mean, off the top of my head, I don't know, but you guys all know. You guys can all think of some. But this was not the place where I agree. So it's a rare, inappropriate song choice in Smallville. I always go back to, the one I always go back to is the Kid Rock song at the end of Whisper. Where Lana's walking, I was like, Cold and Empty is the name of it. And I was like, well, what? Did somebody just go to the rodeo this week? Was this on their mind? I'm like, I don't know. But
they really needed to use Kid Rock.
Smallville is really on point usually with the music when it's not a Disney. That's why it sticks out more, because they're usually on point. And I think that's why we're like,
yeah,
like,
usually
this
I think the song choices are good. But this, in this case, it was just so wrong that it is just, it, every time it's like, you're not paying attention to what's happening in the scene, because it's like, really? We're going to break out the simple plan for this? Okay.
Well, there's no coach, there's no cheerleaders, there's no, all that's gone. He's lost all that, and he's just by himself.
He's lost it all, and how could this happen to him? He made his own freaking choice.
Who would have thought it? Jeff Johns seemed like such a nice kid.
You know, if I take this football scholarship, I'm going to be in the same situation as Jeff. I'm going to have to lie on every physical, rig every test. I'm going to have to do anything I can to protect my secret. I want to believe that I could go out there and play football like any normal college kid. But the fact is, I have powers that no other athlete has. Coop was right. It's not fair that Jeff was out there on that field, just like it's not fair when I'm out there competing. So I've decided to give up football.
Clark. I know how difficult it is to give up something you love.
But this decision you made, son, it shows integrity well beyond your years.
And why don't I feel good about it?
Look at me, Clark. If you have your heart set on going to MedU or any other school, somehow, some way, your mother and I will make sure that you get to go. Is that understood?
Yeah.
Good.
Recruit got an 8.0 out of 10 on IMDb, and Neil Bailey from Superman Homepage gave it a 1.5. out of 5. And you guys can go read his review and judge his thoughts for yourself. I'll post it on the social media. So I ask you, Trisha, on the letter grade scale, what would you give Recruit?
Out of all Smallville episodes, probably a B+.
B+, okay.
B+.
I am going to be in the B range as well, but I'm going to be on the other end of that spectrum. I'm going to give it a B-. Okay. I saw more of the threads dangling than you did. In this great tapestry of an episode, so I think you kind of tugged at him, I kind of pulled at him, the whole thing kind of fell off the wall for me, but better than I remember, I think. So a lot of good points here, you know, Superman, like, you know, becoming a man, making the right decisions, you know, that kind of stuff, growing up, integrity and those kinds of things, and it closes the book on the football plot line, which I had a big problem with, and so now we're done with that. It's time to put away childish things and get on to things like the stones of power for the rest of the rest.
Those
of the
stones
season.
Are important.
So
it's a good Lois episode, so I give it a lot of credit for that. So
absolutely, yeah, and I will say, yes, the characterization of Lois here, which I think Smallville kind of screws up on when it gets in these middle years where they're spinning their wheels on everything. But here, she's still fresh, and they still got her character down, got a good grasp of her character still at this point. So, so. The tally board. Let's talk about it. We got a +1 for blue shirt, red jacket. So we're at 18. We have a +1 for episode title set in episode, because they say recruit in the first scene. We're at 31. And we have +1 for a hospital visit, which brings us to 60 hospital visits. We are 79 episodes in, and we have 60 hospital visits. So there you have it. Now, Bechdel test. Pass, I think. What do you think? Because Lois and Chloe talk about some stuff, not necessarily a guy. What's your call on this, Trisha?
Lois and Chloe are frequently talking about a guy. They're not talking necessarily about a boy they like, but they are talking about a guy frequently. I don't know. I didn't clock whether or not it passes the Bechdel test. It does at least have scenes with Chloe and Lois talking to each other.
So we're going to go with that. I'm going to give this episode the benefit of the doubt and call it a pass because there's a lot of Chloe and Lois interactions.
There is a lot of Chloe and Lois interaction.
Like investigation mode kind of stuff, you know? So not just, again, I think the key is it's not some like, Clark likes me or something like that.
Yeah, no, I'll give it a pass because I'll give it at least for the scene in the beginning where they're talking about Lois getting out of jail. Because while technically there is a man involved, that is not the subject of the conversation.
Well, there you have it. There's our tally board.
There you go.
So, Trisha, lots of fun talking about Small again. So if people want to find you and your work out there on the internet, where can they find you?
They can find stuff that I have written on Sci-Fi Fangirls. It's sci-fi.com/sci-fi-wire/fangirls, but just go to sci-fi.com and click the little button that says Fangirls. Otherwise, you can find me on the Twitters. That's my primary location. It's twitter.com/TrishaEnnis. It's TRICIAENNIS. Most talking about nerdy things. So,
as for me, you can find me on Twitter at MoronZach. That's MoreOnZach. I'm also host of another podcast, Standard Orbit, on the Trek FM podcast network. We talk about all things Captain Kirk and the Enterprise over there. Find us on Twitter at Trek FM. As for the podcast itself, you can find us on Always Smallville with one S on Twitter, Always Soul in the Smallville on Facebook, and you can send us an email at alwaysmallville@gmail.com, once again with one S. Well, that's going to do it this week for our Smallville discussion on Recruit, but stay tuned next time for Crypto. Until then, always hold on to Smallville. Oh, chocolate girl, why are you looking like something I want? I'm finding out true. I'm your little Asian friend, well, she can come if she wants. I'm finding out true. I'm one of the self-conscious girls who's trying to hide who they are with makeup. I'm finding out true. You know, it's a girl in the front with the tight pants I really want to shake up. You up.